Hello, hello. Welcome to another episode of the Seminal Wrap. I'm Perry Kofidakis, and I'll be your host today. Brian Pellerin is off on daddy duty. Little congratulations to him. Before we get into takeaways from the spring showcase, everything else we've seen from Florida State football this spring, it's a little recap of the weekend in Florida State sports.
Florida State men's tennis clinched its first ever ACC championship on Sunday, snapping Virginia's 62-match winning streak over ACC opponents with a thrilling 4-3 comeback. Florida State softball, after sweeping Boston College, is now 36-10 overall with a 15-3 conference record, first in the ACC. Florida State men's golf, unfortunately, fell short to UNC in the semifinals of the ACC championship in match play. Men's basketball saw some roster activity over this weekend, Jalen Worley entering the transfer portal, but then Hampton transfer Jerry Dang coming to the Seminoles. And finally, Florida State baseball wrapped up a rough week. The Seminoles suffered their first non-conference loss in the season to Mercer on Tuesday, and then followed that up with its first series loss in a month, dropping an easily winnable three games to Wake Forest.
We'll get into that a little bit later at the end of the show. With Jordan Silversmith, who we're welcoming here, Tom Hog Nation staff writer. He has seen everything up close and personal this spring, baseball diamond, football field. We'll get into both of that. But first off, Jordan, how's it going?
Yeah, Perry, thanks for having me on. I'm really glad we were able to do this. Last week, we're trying to get this going, but then I got sick, and then we were like, all right, what should we do? And then obviously we had the showcase and a busy baseball weekend, so happy to get this started. And it might be the off season, but it's really not the off season with things to talk about. Baseball, as you mentioned, spring showcase last Saturday. We got the draft coming up this weekend. Another big baseball series against Duke for Florida State this weekend. They ranked sixth today, so excited to tackle with you today.
Yeah, we have been meaning to get this going for a while. You can hear from the rushed intro. It's been a little bit for the boy, but we're back. We're here. Spring football, it's camp for everybody. We'll start off with the spring showcase. We'll work our way backwards from the end to the beginning. Right off top, what was your major takeaways from the spring showcase? What did you see that you can somehow glean from the maybe like 15 minutes combined of actual action?
Yeah, no, I mean, absolutely. It ended up being more that I could take away than expected. Norvell going in was basically letting everybody know that it was going to be a practice. I was letting people that I knew to go to the circus instead of the game because it would probably end up being more interesting. But we actually saw a lot more than I expected. What ended up happening was there was a 15-minute 11-on-11 period and then a 10-minute 11-on-11 period. But these guys hit, like, they were physical. I mean, obviously people got hurt. Malik Benson ended up going down, which could end up being a ginormous loss. And we'll get into the receiving room later on in the pod. I just think the biggest thing to take away is the defense might have a better chance of being better than the group last year. They might not necessarily be better like the final few weeks of the season, but I'm just talking week one through week 12, like a full year. Because we forget, like before the second half against Clemson, like they were not a dominant defense. They were not going to go out and shut out Louisville like they did a few months down the road. But I just think the addition of Marvin Jones Jr., the way he pairs with Patrick Payton, Lundy being back, he looks like a different player. And then your three pillars in the back end with Shaheem, Ventrell, Azarie. I mean, that's basically half the roster right there that could all end up being all ACC caliber players. You throw in Daryl Jackson in there too, so that's now seven guys. And you're like, wow, like this is a really, really top-heavy group. And then you get going and there's depth everywhere. We'll see what they end up wanting to do out of the portal, but I've been impressed with the linebacking core. Omar Graham's been really good this spring, and he was decent on Saturday. Blake Nicholson's been coming along. You obviously got a lot of young corners in the back end, too, young safeties. I think the only question mark we have in defense right now is who is going to be Shaheem Brown's running mate. I think he's actually had an up-and-down spring because they basically rotated the player next to him between Conrad, Devontae Brown, Ashton Barker, KJ Kirkland. And it looks like Devontae Brown, I think, has the inside track right now. But also, if there was to be one spot in the portal, I would expect Florida State to hit, it would be that safety position.
Okay, so defense, by and far, you've mentioned in your coverage, I wouldn't say like devastatingly ahead of the offense, but pretty clearly ahead of the offense. So you saw them perform exactly how you expected on Saturday, or were they a little bit better than you were thinking in that kind of live game format? Or at least,
yeah, I mean,
live audience.
I honestly thought it was pretty similar what I expected to be. I mean, the one bit of a surprise was the amount of success that Florida State had running the ball. Obviously, Atkins, he loves to rotate, and so they really haven't had like their top five offensive line together for the majority of spring until the last couple of weeks. So they obviously had some big hitting run plays, which is a surprise with the amount of run stuffers that they have up front. Sione Lolohe, the Oregon State transfer, he's been really superb. Grady Kelly's been another guy that we might not hear a lot about, but he's been a really stout run defender. Obviously, Marvin Jones in the run game has been unbelievable. This spring, I asked him about it after the showcase, and he basically said that his mindset in the run game used to be a killer, and he certainly has been that way. So that would be the only thing of the defense that surprised me was some of the plays they had that the offense had in the running game. But also, it took a while to get there too. Florida State, they love running these like long developing run plays, and so it wasn't like counter hit early right off the bat. But it seemed like the defense started to get a little bit worn down towards the end of practice. But again, we're talking spring conditioning levels where half the team's going out injured because nobody's bodies are up to play for a football game. So that would be the one thing that maybe shocked me a little bit. But besides that, like, tell me a better defense in the ACC right now, and they could to go toe to toe with anybody.
A lofty praise of offensively. They have made progress, obviously, since the beginning. But overall, how do you think Ongale did? How do you think you mentioned the receiver core. Where there were you like, okay, this is what I'm looking for. This is where they actually have put the work in and made things work. Where were you still like, oh man, like they need to get ready before Ireland?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. There definitely has been progress. And I think a big thing too is it's a very difficult, sophisticated playbook. And you've seen throughout spring Norvell kind of open it up as it's gone along. And I think that's been really good to see is because obviously it's a very transfer heavy offense, just like some of the names we mentioned on the defensive side. So I think that they're starting to understand the playbook a little bit more. I think some of those run plays, like I said, have been starting to hit. They've done a good job mixing in the long-winded running plays, the counter runs where you pull sometimes two guard and a tackle, so two offensive linemen or a tackle and a tight end. So they just take a while to develop a little bit of outside zone we've seen as well. So I think the run game has been decent. It's going to be a work in progress as the offensive line gels together. We'll see about Robert Scott, how much of an impact he makes in the fall. Obviously, he didn't do anything in the spring, as Norvell mentioned. The receiving core, as you said, is right now my biggest concern, especially with Malik Benson, who is the only guy who can consistently get open, consistently get separation. Besides him and Jalen Lucas, who obviously is not a receiver but has been really good in the spring game, you're going down the line just like who is going to step up and make a play. Hakeem was not noticeable at all in the spring game, I thought. Kentron had that big drop early on and didn't really do much after that. Darion Williamson and Ja'Kai Douglas, they were okay. But again, you know what you're getting from them. Obviously, Destin Hill has been out. He was seen in crutches with a massive wrap along his, I think it was his right leg, but I definitely could be mistaken on that one, or along one of his legs. So you just start going down the line. And my big example has been, so you're in South Bend in early November. The weather is terrible. It's 3rd and 7, and Notre Dame has an incredible secondary. They return a bunch of pieces. Where is the ball going to go? Like, I understand that DJ has a big arm, and I understand that this is a fast and explosive group, but who's getting open? And besides Malik Benson, that question has not been answered at all, in my opinion. And that was probably my biggest drawback from the spring showcase was these guys are not ready yet. I mean, at the same time, we know what the secondary is too. It's probably the best unit on defense, going to be the worst unit on offense, but it's a concern. It's a concern for sure.
Separation or drops, what's the bigger one to you as far as concern?
Separation. I
Okay.
just think the drops, I've been doing the drop counter. You just hope that over time you develop that chemistry with DJ. But to me, the separation is a massive problem. And I think the biggest giveaway that we know it's a concern, but no one's saying it out loud, is when the team goes into position drills during practice, Norvell is always with the receivers. He's not like, oh, linebackers one day, offense. No, it's only the receivers. And that's been consistent throughout spring. And part of it is because they're not doing any game planning work on the defensive side. Usually, when the offense is in position drills, the defense starts doing some of the scout team work. They're obviously not doing that. Obviously, the receiving core has a ton of scholarship players, at least like 15 scholarship receivers. So sometimes even like Dugan needs a little bit of help. But by and large, I think it goes to show that there's a concern on Norvell's side because that's where he's spending the majority of his time. He continuously will call out the receiving group, and Norvell, and we'll talk about this later, loves coach talk, loves to not really show his hand or give anything away. But how many times have you heard drops, missed opportunities, but there's inconsistency? And so to me, that's a big concern from the receiving core, is whether or not the drops will be a problem, that's for sure. But it also is football, and it's tight coverage, and Florida State plays man. But the biggest thing is, just you're looking down the field, there's nobody's open, and he's got coverage sack after coverage sack.
And then, is that the position group on either side of the ball that you are the most concerned about? And if yes, what's still that like number two or 1B?
Yeah, I think right now it probably is. I think defensively, the biggest concern you have to have is still with the linebackers. Like I said, DJ Lundy has been superb as a leader. He's been the guy that, so obviously Florida State is really interested and has been participating in the coach to player helmet communication. And so Adam Fuller calls into DJ Lundy. So it's important that he understands the defense really well. It's important that he communicates really well as a leader, like I mentioned. So I think he's been really strong there, but who his running mate's going to be is still up in the air. Sean Murphy didn't really separate like we thought he would during the spring. He went down during the spring game and then got up gingerly and didn't really do much work after that. Whether or not you turn it over to Omar Graham, you can, but again, some of his run fits are still questionable. Blake Nicholson is probably still young. And then the two recruits that they've got, Tamir Hickman-Collins and Jaden Paris, they've honestly been like really, really impressive, but they've been impressive against the third string offense. Those guys aren't going to be ready to go. So who exactly is going to be Lundy's running mate, and how much run can you give Lundy is going to be the biggest question, because we know that Florida State loves to rotate. We know that especially in the 12-team playoff, they're looking for the long haul. They're not just going to send guys out 80%, 90% snap share. Only Shaheen Brown probably will not leave the field. Besides that, they're obviously going to rotate. Who are going to be the second, third, fourth linebackers behind them? They're going to step up at, I don't know, probably Sean Murphy, but not totally impressive throughout all of spring.
What position group do you think would be most likely for Florida State to address in the transfer portal over the next couple of days?
I want to say receiver. I don't think it will be. I think you only take a receiver that's totally proven. Like Keon, obviously, is the perfect example. Don't think that's coming. If it is coming, Florida State and every other college in the country will be after them. So I think the two obvious ones are safety. Again, I just don't think that they trust the running back next to Shaheen Brown. They trust Devontae Brown the most, it seems like. You'll hear Norvell talk highly about him. He's played a lot of college football. This is a third school. Like, he gets it. He played at Miami last year. So he's played Power 5 ball. It's not just playing UCF, but UCF has been pretty good. The other thing I would say would have to be tight end. Warlock and West, they made some decent catches in the spring game. I thought that they were probably DJ's favorite targets to throw to. But again, like, how much do you really trust these guys? Morlock, it has been steady. The ceiling, obviously, is not Jaheim Bell last year. Jackson West, again, he's had a really good camp. He's a dominant run blocker, but he's had health concerns all of his college career. He said he's healthy now. We just talked the other day with the media. No reason to believe that he's not healthy. He's been out there. But again, is he durable over the span of not only just 12 games, but could it be a 13 in the AC Championship game? And then now, obviously, with the extended playoff, you're looking at, can bodies hold up 14, 15, 16 games? And that's completely different than what we've seen before. And so I think even if these guys are serviceable, you're going to have to rotate. You're going to have that depth. And besides those two, I mean, Brian Courtney, he was basically only on special teams last year. Like, can you expect him to step up in that third role like Jackson West had to do? I don't think so right now. And so I think the safety and tight end would be most realistic, not maybe not highest on the wish list, but most realistic, if that answers your question.
Yeah, no, that answered all the questions. We're staying with the big picture a little bit still here. What did you see throughout spring that maybe you didn't fully see on Saturday? Because it was just a single slice into the entire body of work. Like, if you could put context into both a positive and a negative, or one or the other.
Absolutely, absolutely. So I think just the biggest takeaway was DJ Uiagalelei has been a lot better in spring than I think he was on Saturday. He himself admitted afterwards that it was a bit of an up and down day. Norvell didn't really give him a glowing report either in this press conference. But when you see him throw the ball, I imagine it's what it's like seeing Josh Allen or Patrick Mahomes throw the ball in person. I mean, he just, it's 1 foot drops, it's a flick of the wrist, and the ball just effortlessly goes 45, 50 yards down the field. I mean, just the way that he throws it, it's clearly a God-given talent in that sense. Besides that, I think that his mentality, and I've written about this a little bit too, is perfect for this roster and what Florida State is trying to achieve. You have a really emotional coach in Norvell who's up in your face. And in that, you have a very emotional team. And we saw the emotions last year. And I think similarly to Travis, DJ being such a laid-back guy, self-described California kid, it just perfectly for the team to have this emotional coach and kind of a less emotional big leader as the quarterback. And I think that's really important to have on the team, obviously, when things go a little bit haywire as they do in football. So I didn't think he had his best day. He wasn't as big of a threat as a runner as he had been. Like, some of the option plays were stopped right at the line of scrimmage. But I think he's done a lot of good throughout the spring. He does have his occasional just layup that just gets intercepted, or he misthrows and short arms. And I think that's what you're going to get with DJ. But at the same time, you're talking about someone that just turned 23 years old over the weekend. I mean, you're talking about a full-fledged adult. And I just think the tangibles and the intangibles, something you might not have been able to see as much on Saturday, but he's fine. Like, he's good. He's fine. It's serviceable for this year. The one concern I have, obviously, is that all the first-time transfer quarterbacks last year, they didn't really work. Devin Leary, Kentucky, didn't really work. Sam Hartman, Notre Dame, didn't really work. Brendan Armstrong, NC State, didn't really work. It was really the two-year guys, Bo Nix, Penix, you can go down the line, but those were all two-year guys. So whether or not Norvell can get DJ and the offense ready in a year, I don't know. I think that's the question now you're facing. It's not, if it was a second year, you'd feel a lot better. In a single year, I don't know. And that's obviously the question marks that we'll have to see over the summer and then into fall camp.
And so you had him marked as one of your mid-spring offensive MVPs alongside Lawrence Toa-Philly and Malik Benson, Marvin Jones Jr., DJ Lundy, AZ Thomas from the defensive side. Are they still your full spring MVPs? Who's switched out? Who's staying? Is there a weird combination of all of them?
Yeah, no, for sure. I think the biggest one that you would consider switching out would be Toa-Philly. And it's not because Toa-Philly has done anything wrong. And everything I wrote about actually was perfect, because a day later, the Seminole show, what's a decline that comes out on YouTube. And there was this whole just Lawrence Toa-Philly section about his role as a leader, which was really cool, about 5 minutes. I'll go check it out if you're bored and I have 20 minutes. And as Norvell said on Saturday, they were really light with Toa-Philly during the showcase. They've been light with him throughout spring. And obviously, he was injured after the ACC Championship game, and they've been working him back. But I think you'd sub him out. You'd have to sub Rodale Williams in, or Justin Tye, running back room as a whole. Roydell was really impressive on Saturday. He showed great vision, great burst, but also really impressive physicality at the same time. He's 220, 225, but the same kind of bounce of the hole and then hit it on his touchdown was really impressive, but also the same way that he fought for extra yards. Obviously, the 1-2 punt that him and Toa-Philly will have will be difficult for defenses to slow down. Same thing, Jalen Lucas, obviously, he's been such a threat as a runner and a receiver. I thought he was really good in between the tackles. On Saturday, he had a really decent run that way, which was good to see for a smaller guy, but he got lost in there and ran for a first down. So I think you could probably take Toa-Philly out and put the entire running back room in, just because of the room's ability as a whole to not only catch the ball, but run efficiently, and also the run block or the pass blocking has been really good. So that's been really impressive to me. Defensively, Marvin Jones Jr., he's been the best player on the team in spring. He was the best player at the showcase. He's a star. Like, yeah, obviously, the Jermaine Johnson comparison sounds lazy because it's another Georgia defensive lineman, injury issues, but five-star recruit. It's the same. Like, it's just gonna work. He's gonna be for first team all ACC. He's not gonna be able to get taken off the field. He's such a physical run defender on first down. He just knocks tackles back, knocks back guards that are pulling. Usually faces off against Jeremiah Byers, and he ate his lunch a couple times on Saturday. And again, Byers is what, like 6'5", 330? Like, you're talking about a massive man on the other side of the ball. And then his pass rush is dominant as well. He can go speed to power, power to speed. He's got a lot in his arsenal. Like, you can tell he went to Georgia for a couple of years. And I've just been so impressed with him. And then the biggest thing, too, is his physicality. I mean, he's every bit 6'5", 250. Sometimes Florida State. Maybe they exaggerate a little bit on the weight and the height, but this guy is not exaggerating. This is, you see him in person, you're like, wow, and he plays that way. And he's a very kind of soft-spoken guy. I talked to the media afterwards on Saturday, just not really about me, about what he can do better, about the defense as a whole. But man, him and Pat Payton, 3rd and 8, good luck. You can't double team them both, and neither one of them can get after the quarterback.
So you're still keeping DJ and AZ up there
Yeah, I think
in the top
you
three.
have
Yeah.
to. I think DJ, like I said, has been, his leadership has just been so important for the defense calling out the plays. And I just think right now AZ has been a little better than Fentrell. I mean, nothing crazy, but I just think his physicality at the line of scrimmage has been really impressive, and then his work as a run defender too. Not to say that Fentrell also can't be physical, can't tackle, because that was something when I talked to him earlier in the spring, he mentioned that he wanted to put more physicality on spring. So we obviously know that that's something that he's trying to work on. I just think right now AZ is a little bit ahead of him, and he has been flat out dominant pass game and getting off blocks in the run game as well.
And then we're going to wrap it up real quick before we get into our spring showcase format rant. I don't know if rant, more just discussion. But
Maybe, maybe.
what are your big takeaways? Like, what are your if you somebody stopped you in the street and you're like, hey, what do I need to know about Florida State football after this spring? Like, what are you telling that guy just to make him go away
Yeah,
and feel
just, I mean,
smarter?
basically to summarize, just to summarize, the defense, they're legit. They have the guys. They not only have the guys, but they have the depth, like I mentioned. And Mike Norvell has this 50% number in his mind where he doesn't want his front court defensive line playing more than 50% snap share throughout the season. And you could have feel it early on in the year last year when Verson Payton would leave the field at times with Gilbert Edmond and Byron Turner Jr. And I think this year, like, you just won't feel that effect as much. Jaye, he's been really good inside, outside. Grady Kelly, like I mentioned, has been really good. Byron Turner has been solid. So, and then even Jaden Jones, he got hurt towards the end of spring, but even he has been kind of someone that was coming along as well. So I've been really impressed with that defensive line group as a whole. You add in Amari Williams, 2024 signee, top 300 guy, and he's coming as a summer enrollee. And you've got like a really decent group and bodies to throw. You take out that Josh Farmer didn't even play throughout spring, and he's your starting defensive tackle. They've got guys. They've got a lot of guys that can do a lot of things. They're versatile. They can play inside, outside. Fuller loves to mix up the coverage. So first takeaway, like I mentioned earlier, and I'll say now, this defense, week one to week 12, they might have better stats at the end of the year, better than the defense last year, even if that final 4-game stretch or 3-game stretch, you probably won't ever see ever again or for a long time. Secondly, I think you have to worry about just is the offense, is the receiving quarter. They're going to be explosive. They're going to take shots down the field as a hose, but it's going to be very feast or famine. And I think it's going to take a while for it to get its legs underneath them before they're really a well-oiled machine. When does that come? Who knows? They have Clemson in early October. Is it a month-long thing, or is it a season-long thing, or is it a 6-week thing? But not when Clemson is, I think, is week 5 or week 6. So when does that necessarily happen? But it's going to be a work in progress. They're going to need to rely on the running game. Not to say that they can't. That'd be my third point. You're going to see an explosive running game. I think this offensive line, they've got 7 or 8 pieces that Atkins will feel comfortable rotating with, guys that have played a ton of Power Five football. I mean, you go down the line, Darius Washington, all ACC guy, 6th year. TJ Ferguson, Alabama. Malik Smith, 6th year. Richie Leonard played 2 years at Florida. I think, no, 3 years at Florida. You know, again, there. JB, he's going to his 2nd year. I think he's now a 5th year senior or a redshirt senior. Like, you got a lot of college experience along that offensive line. So they'll be able to lean on that group for sure. Whether or not they can put it all together, I'm not sure whether or not they need to. Can they just rely on the defense, Mike Norvell style of play? Don't turn the ball over. Don't do anything stupid. Don't make a bad play a bad day. Go out and just take it one play at a time. Will that be a good enough formula? Maybe, but it's tough to say. I just think the biggest thing right now with the roster is it's a much more difficult schedule than people are giving credit for. I think even Georgia Tech, they're only going to be 2 touchdown favorites at most. Boston College, we know what that was. Last year, SMU's gonna be really good. Memphis, they were a 10-win team last year. So hopefully the offense can kind of put it together early on in the season. If not, they're really gonna have to lean on the defense side of the ball to carry them through the early part of the schedule.
Yeah, because that's what they have Memphis week three, or third game. I don't know about week three. I think they have
Oh yeah,
four
it's,
now.
we are
Four
set
now,
to
right?
buy after
Yeah,
BC.
but no, that's a, yeah, because that's a, yeah, Georgia Tech, even if they are Georgia Tech, it's still international game,
But
still
they were like
weird.
decent to end the year. Like, it's not
Yeah.
like they're gonna, I don't know they're gonna like don't go and be like, oh yeah, like this guy's they're gonna
Yeah.
lose. They're gonna lose, but will it be a one school game at halftime? Probably. Like BC, Bill O'Brien, still Castellanos. Like, again, not saying they're gonna lose. Could there be an Ireland hangover for a quarter? Yeah. So they're gonna need to really be firing. And I just didn't get that from the offensive side of the ball that they're gonna be. Wow, you know what they were last year. And again, and it's hard too to learn a tough offense. You're losing every single contributor, Bell, Coleman, Wilson, Benson across the board. So it makes sense. But again, like, can Malik Benson be a wide receiver one on a college football playoff team is the question. You're leaving yourself with spring, and you can't answer that right now. And I'm not sure if you will, if that answer will be a yes as the season comes closer.
Yeah, now there's a long off season. There's a big fall. See if anybody rises up. Yeah, there are a number of receivers. Yeah, who could have no idea what Destin Hill will do. But like you said, right now, as of the way the roster is constructed at the moment, there's questions, especially when there are questions with what DJ can do consistently. Because we saw him put up amazing games like at Florida State in 2022. He absolutely dominated that game. But then you look at his debut. I don't know if you remember that Clemson, Georgia, and it was just like, I think a
Sure.
6-3 game, something like an absolute like SEC
Oh, it's ridiculous.
2010
I think like
level,
Plum
like
Keenan or
stinker.
something. Yeah.
Yeah. And that again, he was a true freshman a couple years ago. He's a much different player, but will the run game be enough to offset that as they get through the growing pains? And I think based off what you have so dutifully informed us of is going to be the big question as we roll into the main part of the season. But before we get there, it is the like discussion point I think I've seen nonstop about the showcase, because I don't think anybody was like, that was an amazing thing to watch. I think it was productive. I think it was good for the team. I think that is probably the reason why they do it that way rather than a game. But in your opinion, media, fan, viewer of football, I get it, I can't be mad at it, or is it, I get it, I wish you don't do it? Like, how do you feel about the way that Florida State has approached it every year so far under Mike Norvell?
Yeah, I'll just take it at this year because this year obviously was the most that I've covered the team or the, well, this spring game. Well, in general, my football philosophy is I don't understand the spring game. I don't know why you do it. If you want, they have done closed door scrimmages before. I don't know. I just couldn't do that as well. I assume it's just a way to get people excited about the football season, give fans something to latch on to. But as far as pure football productivity, there's no way you come out ahead from all that. So at the same time, I didn't fully understand what they were doing on Saturday. Like I said, Norvell came out and said, listen, guys, like, this is not going to be anything interesting. He was basically saying, don't go. It's like, we call it a showcase for a reason. It's not a game. Like I said, he sounded like Allen Iverson in that way. It's like, we're not talking about a game. We're talking about a showcase. And I thought that was like, okay, fine. That's cool with me. I know the team looks like, and I go to the practices every day. But in general, we don't necessarily need extra hits on the guys. Like, it's fine. We're done with spring. Fine. Then they go out there. We think the most important thing is going to be the turquoise jerseys. Again, cool. I'm pro the jerseys. I know some people were anti. I think it's like, what do you think
No,
about it?
I'm pro jersey. I'm pro jersey. I'm pro weird jersey because I think that's my most, I guess you're Gen Z, so you might have weirder takes, but the millennial take, that's why I'm old enough to have when millennials were like the target. I like weird jerseys. I like cool jerseys. The gross like pro combat ones that FSU wore in like 2009 are some of the funniest. I wish they would wear them again. Like I was always picking the ugly jerseys in NCAA. So maybe the wrong person to ask, but I at least
Yeah,
support your opinion. Yeah.
I was okay with them. I also like the new style, just the regular garnet and white jersey. Like, I think they're cool. Then so they start off with like their usual practice setup. I'm like, okay, fine, just gonna be a practice. Fine. Then they start going out and doing 11 on 11 for 15 minutes, and guys are just smashing into each other. Again, if you want that level of physicality, you could have had that in a practice, closed door. Again, and at the same time, too, having all of this where Doak Campbell does not look like a place ready to host a football game anytime soon. Certainly didn't look like it April 20th. Whether or not this can get ready to go in 4 months' time, I don't know. I don't work in construction. I don't know how that goes. But boy, it was not ready to go. Let's just say that. So you've got like this weird group of, they said there was 18,061 people, but they're all spread out. You've got do not enter signs. You've got fencing in the stands to make sure people don't go in. And then at the same time, you've got the in-game entertainment running their promotions during the play. And it's like, maybe Norvell kind of wanted to like pump crowd noise in that sense, but it was just a very odd experience. I thought he had the right idea. We're just going to practice. We're not going to put anything on film. No one's going to get hurt. Then he decided to start running play action bootleg where we pull the guard and the tackle and throw it back. He like really just advanced plays. Now we've got the top receiver, the top left guard, the second string running back. They're all getting carted off the field. And we look at the at 6 o'clock, like, wait, like what are we doing here? So, say the least, not impressed, not happy. I appreciate the forethought, and the execution was not where it needed to be. I'm curious, what did you think, guys? Not being in dope, but kind of just walking home.
Oh, the TV experience, I don't know why anybody does it. If it wasn't part of the job, I wouldn't have done it because, again, it is a practice. And it's funny, you were communicating during it. It's like a little bit tape delayed too, because like they're running commercials during the boring stuff. When they ran the special teams drills, they had no idea what to show on television. It was the funniest thing in the entire world. Like, and I remember, this is, I think, the first year that everybody was clear on what was going on, because you look at our coverage from last year, and I like made sure to emphasize, like, this is not a real thing. This is a showcase. This is not a game. There's no game. There's no game. And like people, I remember ACC network coverage was shot. Like they weren't prepared. Like they did not pay attention to it. So this year, I think because they emphasized how not real of a game it was, that it just filtered into a whole entire not caring. Like, and it's fun. There's two schools of thought. Like, I think to a degree, you need to do the PR of it. Like, it right. is a chance to get your fan base excited. On a minor level, it's a revenue driver. Not really. People aren't really coming up to the spring, but it is like affordable. If you're a family that is not able to make the Tallahassee trip, pay the ridiculous hotel prices, but you want to experience it, like, that's usually a big right. thing. There's been occasions where they have gone all out for it. Like, I know people, there's a Vanilla Ice concert. I think T-Pain did it 1 year. They've gone to Orlando and they've tried to do it there to get a little bit of extra money. So they've tried it under different head coaches and they've done their own things. And in the end, it's not worth the criticism. Like, it exposes you to like a perception level on like a lot. Like, if your team goes all out, then like everyone's like, oh my gosh, they're number one. Like, that happened with DeAndre Johnson a little bit of a throwback name there, but like there's like occasion, because Jameis Winston, FSU fans I think in particular are spoiled with spring game, because Jameis Winston's first pass in the spring game was a Hail Mary touchdown, and like he put on that crazy performance, and so everyone's like, oh, like this is a real thing. Like, and then you see all these big names usually show out. And it's your excitement. You want that Archie Manning moment that like Texas fans are having right now. Yeah. But is it worth it? Like, is there anything really gained from it? Like you said, they scrimmaged anyways. You can pretty much get in the action. And I think in the end, the like need to follow tradition of a spring game, I think, is the only reason we're seeing like this ghost of an event happening. Like,
sure.
I think Norvell maybe enjoys the guest coaches aspect of it.
Well, he certainly loves bringing back alumni. Ernie Sims, Rick Stockstill. I think that obviously is an important part to what he does. Whether or not, I think you're right, but all the schools everywhere obviously do the spring game. Hopefully Florida State can be on the cutting edge of getting rid of the spring game. And
yeah, because I didn't look into, sorry to cut you off, but like Kansas also calls it a showcase. But I really saw that by accidentally Googling. I didn't like look too into Kansas football.
It's better than usual. But yeah, I mean, you know what they should do is if you really like want to make an event or like meet the team, they should do like a Midnight Madness version of like
Spring Game. I think that is the right direction.
It's like fun. We'll get everybody there, but it'll be like when LeBron James and Chris Bosh and Dwayne Wade got introduced, bring everybody up on crazy platforms. You can get a cool artist. And no hitting, no physical play. Don't need the best receiver on the team getting carted off without a cleat on his foot. Don't need it. But we can still have something like raise money, sell tickets, meet the team, whatever.
Yeah. And NIL function like that. I think is the move in the right direction. It doesn't take away from practice time. So I think really like Mike Norvell is just so about business. I really think he considers it a waste of time. He's like, why am I going to put on this full scrimmage like this? When what is the benefit that, like, what is the pageantry? Like, there's just so much, like, he respects the game of football, he respects tradition, he respects all that, but like, I think above all, he's like, what is the most efficient way for me to get this football team ready? And so I appreciate that part of it, because really the spring game is just the spring game. It is just all you get is either bragging points to try to like troll your rivals, or your rivals get points on you. Like, they're already running with the DJ no touchdowns in the sprint, but like what he had 30 minutes maybe of just situational work.
Like, you see that on Twitter, like DJ's dad was like retweeting of like DJ threw for 177 yards in 25 minutes. So kind of average that out across the course of the game, and really it's like 360 yards, like a really solid day. It's just like, yeah, once you have Big Dave Uiagalelei on Twitter trying to defend his son for like a mediocre spring game performance, it's
Yeah, like it, and then like it's just a practice. Like it's practice. Like that was maybe a little bit of an elevated energy version of. It was probably equal to one of the more exciting practices you've seen in spring. Like there's some intense ones. Like
yeah,
and so like it's good to bring the alum back. Personally, I liked when they did the flag football game at the halftime of like the real games. Like that was cool seeing them do flag football.
I love that. You knew that too.
Yeah, like that was great. Like there's ways to do it, but who cares? Like it's not like a world ender. I don't think it's gonna affect the standing of the program and like the public. Like I don't think it has like a huge effect like on outside of the fan base. Like the fan base is the one who really needs like the like little bit of drip, like before it's giving me like the little bit of high, but like outside of that, like what is there to glean from a spring? It really is spring camp. Like, and spring camp is even like the pre to fall. Like there is just so much that isn't ready or baked or fully formed why not? So did we even come to a conclusion? I think we just both were like, yeah, it sucked, but who cares?
I think the conclusion is we need to do an NIL sponsored spring game where they don't play tackle football and do something else. And
something for the fans, to get out of it, because that really is what it boils to for the fan base. The media, sure, we're annoyed when we have there's not a game to write about. FSU beat FSU, but like there's only so many times you can make that joke. So I think overall it was fine. And also we would have watched a weird game. If you think about it, if DJ and Trevor Jackson were the only two DJ would have been the only scholarship quarterback available.
Yeah.
So they would have been watching not a fun preseason game, pretty much. Nobody likes the preseason anyways.
If it was Brock Line in there, it might have been more interesting. And I think that's a good point. Like once Trevor Jackson started running with the twos, like it's okay. Like he's a true freshman and he was not ready to go and he was thrown into action and it's good reps for him. But yeah, to your point, like once DJ comes off the field, you're like,
need the reps, but that's practice. That's why nobody watches practice because it's just that. Yeah. It's players getting better and working to get better. And made the allusion
to your point, it's spring practice too. Like this is not a finished product at all or even close to it. I mean, you saw how much the defense, for example, grew over the span of 12 weeks last year in the season. And now they get another summer in the weight room with obviously one of the best conditioning programs in the country. Like this is not close to finished product. And for that reason, like what's the point of putting on the spring game when you know that this isn't what the actual outcome is going to be later on? Because then you just look right. Like DJ throws for 170 yards, and everyone's like, "Oh, he's terrible." It's like, well, no, he's not terrible, and he won't be the same quarterback he is in the fall. 100% promise you that.
Yeah, so we'll chalk it up to an understanding eye roll on the spring showcase. Okay. And so made the comparison to it being preseason NFL. Speaking of NFL, good transition there. The draft is this week. Yeah. So
Guys, I'm gonna teach you this more.
you'll be writing more on the NFL draft this week, of course, but overall thoughts, Jared Verse, top 15, top 20.
I mean, I think everyone's hopeful top 15. Obviously, the rumor, we're hoping even Atlanta at 8 is probably the ceiling or the most, it's the most possible best case scenario would be Atlanta at 8. There's like, if Minnesota doesn't take a quarterback, they obviously need someone to replace Danielle Hunter. So hopefully top 15, we'll have to see. The draft obviously is such an impossible science to predict. But certainly Verse at the combine and everything else pre-draft has done enough that that conversation should not have changed of him being a top 15 pick. Different from Keon Coleman, who I think we're all hoping late first round going into all the draft stuff. Now you're looking at early to mid second round, I think is probably the best evaluation for him. At the same time, you'd probably think Trey Benson, you're hoping late second. Probably going to be early third, probably into that 60 to 80 range if you have to take a guess at it. And I think the biggest thing too is can Jarian Renardo and Johnny Wilson all crack top 100? So could you get six guys? Was that five or six? I don't know how to do math. That's why I go to
Yeah,
state.
I'm that's
But
a, yeah, we're writer. I was doing it
it's
with my eye
it's
finger.
either five or it's six. Either way, it's impressive. Can they get in the top 100? I think is really interesting. And then I think we're all hoping that towards the later end, soon, hopefully, and I'm really hoping for Akeem Dent. He obviously wasn't ready to the combine. He had a ridiculously good pro day. But then some of like the, you know, I'm talking about where some of these writers will evaluate every single player that's a draft eligible. Like some of those that have come out in April are not very high on Akeem Dent. So they're more just like undrafted free agent rather than drafted. But man, he's one of those examples where, like, you turn on the tape and he lives up to the do-it-all Dent moniker. Like, he'll play in the box and he'll play run defense. Like, he'll obviously, you know, be like your free safety and your center fielder. Like, he can really, he'll play man coverage, he'll play down in the slot. And he was dominant towards the end of the year. He was dominant in that Florida game, obviously. He was dominant in the Louisville game. So, in my mind, there's no real reason that he shouldn't be drafted. Obviously, he's a little undersized. I think he's probably going to come out to like 5'10, 5'11, probably under 200 pounds. So, that's one of the things you have to worry about. But again, teams looking to take a flyer on guys. Like, I don't understand why he wouldn't. He's a little older, but obviously, he's a great veteran presence too at the same time. Coming in as a rookie that knows what professionalism is and how to work. So I think that's a little bit about the draft right now. I mean, anything that I missed on or that you're looking out for as well?
I'm curious to see if and where Fabian Lovett will go. I have a feeling he might be like, I could see a team taking like a sixth, seventh, maybe on him. Yeah, that's I think one of the. But also at that point, you're just maybe hoping that you don't get drafted in so you can have your pick of places. Jordan Travis,
Right, I mean, you think that's gonna be better, yeah.
the injury I think might spook off any like I think a healthy Jordan Travis. Well, we're going down a whole rabbit hole there. I'm gonna start crying if I think about healthy Jordan Travis and what that would have meant for the rest of the year. But
Yeah,
let's
for him.
assume fully healthy Jordan Travis, but everything else still happens in the Florida State cinematic universe. I think he maybe is like a fourth round pick, maybe
Maybe, yeah.
fifth. Yeah, just based off talent, production, all of that. In this current scenario, it's nice to see how ahead of schedule he is moving around. Like he is throwing the ball, he is healthy. The intangibles are like off the marks for him. I think he ends up on a team pretty easily, not as a draftee. I think he's a pretty like solid, yeah.
I think he'll get drafted. I
You
think he
think
will get
like
drafted.
even if it's a late pick?
I think you're right. I think beginning of the season, it was probably fourth to fifth. I think now, right, you're probably looking sixth to seventh, but he's taken a couple of drafts. I mean, listen, look, the Jets, they had him on a visit, and then today they just traded away Zach Wilson. I'm not saying he's going to be a Jet. I'm just saying, like, he has done stuff, and there is plausible scenarios where you could see it. Yeah, I think some of the throwing work that he's done obviously has been super important. Obviously, from the sounds of it, it sounds like everything has healed the way it's supposed to, that there haven't been any setbacks or any lingering issues, which obviously was the best case scenario. So, yeah, absolutely. I can't believe I missed the most important storyline, which is Jordan Travis and where he'll go. And second most important, which I also missed, is Fisk. Can he become a second rounder
Yeah,
at
that's I miss. I
two?
miss him too. So we'll chalk that up as an equal.
Like,
But
I
yeah,
mean,
no,
people
that's
are
it. He shot
saying.
up the boards.
Yeah, people are saying this kid could be going the first round. So, like, who goes higher? Keon, Fisk, Benson, second rounders. Then you're looking, like I said, and then Jaheim Bell, we didn't touch on. I've been surprised that he's been lower than I would have expected, just considering obviously Brock Bowers, like generational tight end prospect, Jatavion Sanders, tight end prospect out of Texas. He's really good, and he'll probably go in the second round. But after that, like, there's a lot of, like, I mean, Cade Stover, like, maybe the couple. Who's the guy from the Michigan tight end? He's there. But it's not like T-Bell is in that category, and you see him as, like, a fifth, sixth-round pick. I think he'll go a little higher than people right now are projecting. I think he'll probably be, like, a fourth rounder.
He's one of those players, I feel like, he goes to the right team and you pick him in your fantasy draft with like the last pick, you're going to be like, oh, I knew it all along. Like he's like right, that right, kind of yeah. Like, I think his, I'm not to his fault. I think maybe just the way the offense had to function last season, if his production was the same level as it was at South Carolina the season before he came over, replicated right. at FSU, he's definitely in the discussion. I feel like as a top three tight end, just based off his physicality, his athleticism, like his versatility. Right. Like, So he's somebody who, if you get him in the fourth round and he goes to the right place, not, I hope he doesn't get Kyle Pitts, but like, I think if he could be productive and like a nice little utility player for a team that is not expecting to get him that about late in the draft when he could have gone much higher. Yeah. All right. So we have ran our gamut on football talk. Let's get into some really quick baseball, really quick overview. Had a rough week last week, 1-3, lost their first non-conference, as we mentioned, first series in over a month. Where do they need to bounce back? Can they do it? And what does the next week look like for them?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you mentioned, it was not great. Again, it's not necessarily, it's baseball. Like, you're going to lose games. That happens. It's college baseball. So you're going to lose games in really stupid ways. And Florida State lost on back-to-back wild pitches to lose the series. And it happens. The game against Mercer, chalk it up with a trap game, coming off, obviously, emotional week the week before. It happened. You go on the road to Wake Forest, who made a really deep run in the College World Series last year. Chase Burns, a dominant ace. Nick Kurtz was back-to-back player of the week for them, their first baseman. And you lose two games by a combined total of two runs. But it happens. Was the bullpen a disaster? Yeah. Was there super untimely hitting? Also, yes. Has this been the same issue with the team the entire season? Yes. But I think all of those can be true. They will be fine. I'm very interested to see how they bounce back. They've been a team that has responded incredibly well to adversity throughout the year. They bounced back really well after Clemson. The entire bullpen has bounced back the last month until this weekend. I think that's probably the biggest thing is like your veteran arms, Joe Charles, Armstrong, Brennan Oxford, like they weren't great. And like, you need to trust somebody. Like, we get it when the freshmen don't throw strikes, but if your top guys aren't throwing strikes or getting outs, like that's going to be a problem. Anyways, as you mentioned, this week they got North Florida at home, which hopefully is going to be good to bounce back game, get right game. And then they go on the road to Duke, who right now ranked sixth in the country. And they just beat Virginia Tech, I believe, in a series victory over the weekend. They're obviously a great team. It's obviously on the road again. And Florida State needs a marquee road ACC series win because all of their wins, the best win of the season right now has been Florida. They're obviously not as good as we thought they were. Miami's under 500, and Boston College is not good, and Louisville to down year. So we're looking for something to hold their hat on, I think. So you're just looking for that response this weekend. And then just big picture, what you want to look for, the health of the starting pitchers. Link Jarrett said last week they will get back. Their Friday starter, beginning of the season, Cam Leiter at some point. They also going to get back Connor Whitaker, their Sunday starter. At some point, too, Ben Barrett, the progressing, they say, another trusted bullpen arm. So I think if you have those three back in the fray, it'll be better than what it was, obviously. But it's just tough. I mean, Florida State threw back-to-back bullpen games on Saturday during the doubleheader when they're down three arms and they're down two weekend starters. And they won one and they lost one. So it happens. Carson Dorsey was amazing, huge for him to extend out 98 pitchers like that, six innings, two runs, 11 Ks. But they'll be fine. Long story short, the sky actually is not falling. It was much more concerning after Clemson than after Wake Forest, in my opinion.
Both of those were doubleheader games, right? The Clemson game was a doubleheader. Yeah, yeah, that was right. It. So, yeah. So that's probably like, that's, I think, getting a little too inside baseball to be like, oh, man, that might be a reason. But I think this weekend, facing off against another top 10 ACC opponent gives them a chance, like you said, to bounce back. They immediately followed up that Clemson lost with the Florida win, right? That was another one of the
You're right,
memorable,
right. Yes,
like.
you're right. Yeah.
So yeah, so like you said, good week for them to follow it up. They've done it before. Challenges there. We will check in next week, see how they were. Yeah, appreciate everybody hanging around, sticking through the awkward me being a host for the first time, I feel like, in a while. Brian makes it look so easy. Jordan, appreciate you. Let me
Absolutely.
lean on everything that you've seen because I've not managed to catch all of that up close. Everybody, if you have not followed Jordan at Jordan Silversmith, no. What is your actual Twitter handle? It's
It's
just your name,
J.
right?
Silversmith 24. Unfortunately, Jordan Silversmith has too many characters on Twitter, but at the same time, if anybody has any handle suggestions, I'm looking to make a change too. So yeah, add J. Silversmith 24, and then you can also DM me your thoughts on this and also what I should change my Twitter handle to.
Let's see. Look at the young man. He's offering to be personable. And that's what that's look after I mess up his handle and everything, too. So, yeah, follow him. He has been on top of everything football, baseball this season. Football is obviously taking a little bit of a siesta, but baseball is kicking the high gear. We have NFL draft coming up. We have recruiting stuff coming up. It is going to be a fun summer as we wait for Brian to get back on daddy from daddy duty. And then we'll have a trifecta together again. So, also, I'm going to drop a mailbag in. To Knowles News all throughout this week. If you have a question, we'll also promote on the Twitter, we'll put it on Facebook. If you have a question for us moving forward, just let us know. We'll get to it next week. But outside of that, thank you for listening. Thank you to everybody. Thank you for supporting everything we're doing on the site. And with that said, it's a wrap.